Hello, everybody. My name is Radio Johnny, and you are listening to Recovery Radio on KRFP 90.3 FM in Moscow, Pullman. Recovery Radio is recorded live at the Latov Recovery Center, located at 531 South Main Street in Moscow. You can contact the LRC by phone at 208-883-1045 or by email at latovrecoverycenter@gmail.com. You can find them on the web at latovrecoverycenter.org and on Facebook. Recovery Radio's purpose is to share with our community how addiction and behavioral health disorders affect us all and how we deal with them. We also share the personal stories of people in and around recovery, highlighting their experience, strength, and insight for continued recovery. And like I said earlier, I'm Radio Johnny, and you want to see the calendar events going on at the LRC, go to that LatovRecoveryCenter.org website, and there's a listing of all the cool stuff going on. And Denise, you have a little announcement, a calendar event coming up.
I do. So the ITC Family Support Group, which stands for Invitation to Change, is going to restart on Wednesday, May 7th. And it's from 5:30 p.m. to 6:45 p.m., and that's every Wednesday. This class runs for 15 weeks. There's a workbook included, and it's basically a support group for family members or friends of someone who struggles with substance use disorder. And we would love for you to give us a call and ask us any questions or sign up at 208-883-1045. And Sean and I are running this class when it starts. And we have one up and going, but it is finishing up this month. So
right. Yeah. Right. So when they call in, just ask for Denise or Sean.
Yeah.
And the front desk people who answer the phones will get you connected.
Yes.
Right away. So fantastic. And today's show, I'm going to be reading an article from a magazine called The Grapevine, which AA calls its meeting in print. And they share stories people have sent in about their recovery process, basically about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. So I'm going to go ahead and read this, and then Denise and I'll comment on it just for fun. And the title of this is A Fuller Understanding, Sober. And it was written by a B.H. from Lawrenceville, Georgia. She never really experienced her alcoholism until she got sober. I remember being a kid and feeling out of place, different, confused, and lost in a world where everyone seemed to have a place but me, where everyone understood how to live and what to do with themselves. Although I hadn't yet taken a drink, I now know that many alcoholics feel this way. I began doing whatever I could to repress that weird kid and to fit in as best I could. I busied myself with constant distractions as a way to numb and cope, which kept me from experiencing life to the fullest. Then I found alcohol. Nothing had done the job of total obliteration of my innermost self until then. Nothing freed me until that first drink. And nothing ever would, or so I thought. When I found alcohol, or when it found me, I felt free, a part of and connected like I had never been before. I was no longer out of place in the scary world. I was home. The disease of alcoholism, at its core, is selfishness and self-centeredness. I, like many others, drank selfishly, damaged my health, and tortured those who loved me. I didn't feel it, though. I didn't know I was selfish. I didn't know I was self-centered. There was no emotional or mental space in the throes of my alcoholic progression to think about that or even care. So I only experienced the full and true nature of my alcoholism when I went through the steps and saw and felt for myself who and what I truly am. I saw that my connection to a higher power was non-existent, that my energy was always focused on my illness of needing more at all costs. I saw how my actions affected others and how my defects were self-will run riot. I understood that my instincts had been out of control and hadn't been assets for some time. I got to see and feel how my actions affected so many, and with a soft heart and empathy, I could actually feel that remorse and look at myself fully, actually sit with the discomfort. Because I could realize this is life, this is the experience, the self-knowledge was quite impossible when I was drunk. Now that I know, after some years of sobriety, that alcoholism is my asset, the best thing that ever happened to me. Having fatal disease can be daunting, if not terrifying, but the life I have now is beyond anything I could have experienced drunk. Working the program, being willing, learning to connect, relying upon my Creator, trusting others, being a part of a loving group that always accepts me, and experiencing the fullness of life in all its ups and downs. This is the greatest gift I could ever imagined. I am forever grateful for the experience of having alcoholism. By getting sober in AA, I discovered how to be truly free. And that's a lot. But I think the main point she was sharing there was the fact that she didn't really understand her alcoholism until she was out of it or in recovery from it. You know, I hear people all the time in meetings introducing themselves as grateful recovering alcoholics. And I thought in the beginning, how in the world can you be grateful to find out you're an alcoholic? Well, in time, I discovered I too was a grateful alcoholic because I discovered I had a disease. I thought of myself as just a mental defective with absolutely no moral compass. And although to an extent that was true, it wasn't because of some defect of character. It was because I was, like she said, in the throes of a disease. I was unable to differentiate the true from the false. And so that, reading this article, really stuck home. And there's a lot of little bits and pieces in there that that hit me. What about you, Miss Denise?
Yeah, I like how she explained that it was self-centered at its core, because I think that that does really explain what eventually happens in addiction. I can't speak for alcoholism, but I can speak for substance use. I don't know that that's immediate. I don't think it was immediate for me that I immediately became really selfish and hurt everyone around me, but that is what eventually happened. Yeah.
Right, right.
I thought she did a good job sharing the whole scope of things in a short reading.
Yeah. That's one real nice thing about these Grapevine articles. The articles, the stories they choose to put in there usually, within, 6 or 7 paragraphs carry a lot of weight.
Yeah.
And they're not written by professional authors. These are just people, well, maybe some are, who knows, but these are mainly just people who have that lived experience of, the disease of alcoholism. And in many of these stories too, like we read one a couple of weeks ago at a meeting where this person talked about, being dual addicted, being both a substance or a drug addict is what he said, and an alcoholic as well. Because for me, the way I look at it is the root cause is the same thing. It's not, having a connection to the higher power, and it's that selfishness and self-centeredness. I don't care if I have to steal from my family and friends to be able to afford my drugs or my alcohol. It all works out to be very, similar in the long run of just how we have to live in the world to get what we need to be okay.
It's also interesting in recovery about how in recovery I found my faith strongly and started getting back on track with being able to, you know, live life and work through things and be healthy and find boundaries and all this kind of stuff, which were things that I didn't have very well before I started using, because I was like 28 before I ever picked up substances. And so I guess I was a late bloomer, sometimes people say.
Yeah, you know? You could say that.
And so like looking back on it, I think that in recovery, so there's a part in here where she talks about being grateful about, you know, that being an alcoholic turned out to be an asset. So I would say for me, I probably more phrase that as like being in recovery is what I'm super grateful for, because now I have community and like I work on things and I've got boundaries and goals and values and all these kinds of things, you know, things that were seriously lacking before.
Right.
So, and I think that that's probably part of the reason that I winded up choosing to try these things, you know, because I really just wasn't living a life in my purpose like I am now. So.
Yeah. The, you know, living your life in your purpose. I like that. My interpretation when she says her alcoholism is an asset, she may be referring to the fact that in the AA program, our experience while we were out there running and gunning, as they say, drinking, we learned a lot about ourselves and you know what we're capable of. And when somebody comes in to the program, looking for the solution that we found, we can share those experiences with them. And people will then, you know, relate. You know, it's like there's all kinds of stories in the big book about where Bill and Bob went and, you know, they didn't go in saying, you know, to see a new guy in the hospital and say, hey, you got to do this program, you know, or you're going
to
die.
So it's that asset of being able to talk with people and show that you understand that you've been there. Is that kind of what it means?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
That makes sense.
So it can be an asset in that way. And I could also see it from the, you know, personal introspection where, wow, you know, I was capable of doing all these things, and also realizing how much better a person I can be, you know, as compared to the way I was when I was, you know, active in my disease. And, you know, that's the big point of, for me, in recovery, how I choose to live my life now. You know, I choose to, you know, spend a few hours a week doing this radio program, you know, with you. You spend your entire career working with people, and helping them get, you know, on a healthier path, you know, from all manner of unfortunate conditions and, you know, substance use disorder, whatever. So it's for the better that I use my experience in my disease as an asset in that way.
Yeah, I guess I do. I guess I do that. That is how I'm here each day. Yeah.
That's right.
Okay. I see what she's saying now. Okay. Yeah. Thanks for helping me understand that statement better. I appreciate
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Not to say that, you know, somebody who just studies, you know, disease from an academic perspective, you know, couldn't be effective as well. There's something about an addict or an alcoholic talking to another addict or alcoholic where they're like, okay, this isn't just theory. This person didn't learn this from a book. It was like, holy cow, what they went through, you know, maybe it's worse than, maybe it's, you know, not as bad as what they've been through. But it definitely differentiates me from somebody who has not had the experience. So, I mean, I guess that's kind of obvious, but
yeah. And we do need the people who've got the book smart and, all the learning part in understanding all these things too, because that's important as well.
Oh yeah.
I was thinking of like the different kinds of, programs that I was a part of when I did the Latah County Drug Court program, different things that I do now that are recovery related, and books and classes that I take, and all of those people who did those, crucially important, because that has brought a lot of healing and understanding as I've worked through those.
Right.
And again, you know, just like I talked about earlier with the ITC group, the Invitation to Change, same thing. You know, Sean and I did this training last summer for, I think it was 20 or 21 hours. And the people who wrote the book were some of our teachers. And it's just amazing to see how they interacted with us in their kindness, and how they like drew out an understanding of, like, if we think of something that was, that's been really important to us in our lives, and they asked us to think about that for a little while and think about like why it brings us just such joy and everything like that. And then think about, you have to let that go because, you know, it's bringing problems to your friends, your family, and your loved ones and everything like that, and how sad that would be, to help us understand like what people are faced with giving up with their substances or alcohol and things, to kind of remind us or get us in those shoes if we haven't struggled with that before. So the background of understanding and being able to write these things and the book smarts is equally as important for us as well. But does really change a conversation when you're talking with someone, especially someone I think new in recovery, that we have these understandings because we've been through it. Like there's a personal level, especially there in the beginning, and for being encouraging as you've been doing over these decades with people, that's just so important. So it's like a combination of all sorts of different people helping people along their path. That's why I'm here, because there were hundreds of people on my path over this last 11 years, and I'd like to be one person on someone else's path.
Right.
Because there's so many that are important. You know?
So many. Yeah. In AA, one of the things that we need to pay attention to is that we're not professional counselors.
Right.
We're not lawyers. We're not bankers. You know, we're not a lot of things. And, you know, if somebody comes in and they have a pretty serious behavioral health issue, like I have two sponsees. One has dissociative identity disorder, or what they used to call multiple personalities. And I have another one who has schizoaffective disorder. I don't tell them how to deal with that. I encourage them to, work with professionals that know how to, you know, get them on the right medication if that's the answer, or, you know, do counseling with professionals. And, you know, I encourage that, of course.
Right, you help remind them.
Yeah, you know, and I'll ask, I can tell when certain people are off their meds or getting to the end of a med cycle. Some of the meds for mental illness right now are injectables, and they last like a month or 2 months, in the system. And I can always tell when people are either off them or, on the edge of coming off of them, just from recognizing kind of behaviors.
Right.
Again, that's just the experience of dealing with individuals. That's, it's not like I could diagnose somebody walking in and off the street.
Right, me neither.
It's important for me to be able to recognize it, because I've noticed that, a manic episode for one person will lead to drinking because, everything's great, So, I can go and have a cocktail tonight and everything will be fine, because their brain's not working right.
Right.
And not that kind of thought doesn't occur to me from time to time. You know, if I go out with a group of people and everyone's having a cocktail before dinner, sometimes my mind is like, ooh, that would be good. Even though I know clearly that would not be good, only because, one would not be enough. I could drink one, but I would want another and another and another. And then the party wouldn't be fun for anyone but me after that.
Right.
So, very important that professionals, get involved and stay involved where they're needed. My program, the NA program, And the programs that we offer or the processes you offer to people here, all very important, all can work together. I think the one thing that's kind of unique about AA is she references, you know, she talks about her connection with her higher power, her creator. In AA, we do kind of insist that you look for something outside yourself, something greater than yourself. And we tell you have to believe in something, but we don't tell you what. And that's an important thing because our program, well, it's based on the concept that we get a daily reprieve from our disease based on, you know, maintaining a fit spiritual condition. It's a spiritual program of action, not a religious program, but a spiritual program where we actually, you know, try to have a conscious contact with some power, higher power, some power outside ourselves, you know, to help me make good decisions. I personally believe that everyone's kind of born with an innate sense of right and wrong to a certain extent.
Typically, yeah.
You know, you're a baby and you pull the cat's tail and it screams. You probably realize even as an infant, oh, maybe that's not good for the cat. Or maybe they don't like the noise. Oh boy, this is a fun toy.
Well, maybe the baby probably doesn't like the noise because it's loud.
Right. But, you know, as we grow and we learn and we watch people around us, you know, we kind of develop that sense of right and wrong. And I know for me, when my drinking really started going over the edge, and it's like, yeah, I should not be drinking and driving. I shouldn't do that. That's not right. But my disease said, no, you're fine. You're okay. You're not going to hurt anybody. You know, you're not going to kill anybody, fortunately. You know, as far as I know, I didn't black out too many times. But, you know, what could have happened in those instances is, you know, to this day, semi-terrifying, but, you know, maintaining that fit spiritual condition that we talk about in the program and connecting with that higher, that's an important part of the AA program, you know. I know in, you know, secular recovery, they rely on, they may rely on people, you know, group, what do you call it? Accountability partners, things like that, to what I would see them as is kind of a higher power. A friend of mine once described when he came into the program, he couldn't get a grip on this higher power thing. He was never raised in a religious family, and so this whole God thing was very confusing to him. So his first sponsor said, well, let's look at it this way. If I had to move this couch, it would take a lot of work for just me to do it. But if you and I move this couch, it would be a lot easier. So a power greater than yourself can be just be you and someone else, you know, at least at a beginning before, you know, you go on to develop that outside of yourself, you know, higher power. And there are some people who I've known in the program who never work the steps, not with the sponsor, don't believe in God or a deity, but manage to maintain sobriety just by being part of the group and having, you know, being involved in service work in AA. But I know for you, you know, you have a very specific higher power named Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And, you know, you have a group of people that you work with.
Yeah, I was going to say biblically, and I wish I knew the scripture right off the top of my head, but biblically, accountability partners or people, I mean, that's in the Bible. And so it's important to not be by yourself. You know, it talks about where two or more are gathered praying and how powerful that is. And yeah, I've always been a believer since I was a kid. Although in my recovery, understanding what that means and the relationship in that has grown immensely. And partly that's because I now have a church that I go to and a community, and I was baptized 10 years ago. And so there's been a big change. And also because God showed up for me in the midst of this transferring from being in active addiction into recovery. And it was very obvious that that's what was going on. And so I'm super grateful for that. And for me, there's just things that I know, experiences that I've had that have increased my faith a ton. Right. Although I will say this, each person has their path and what they believe in and what's important to them. And so I absolutely respect other people's views on that. And so this is just mine. And we have talked before about how this can be a hard thing for people coming into recovery, feeling like, you know, that they have to believe in God or something like that, you know, because it talks about spirituality and things. And so I like that you share on like what that can mean, you know, that it doesn't have to be this particular thing, like maybe like I'm talking about or right. what someone else might talk about. And so just kind of want to on that just say that, you know, if you're thinking about making these changes and coming into recovery and checking out some kind of support group, you know, don't let that get you. I would just encourage that if that's a hang up for you or a struggle, don't let that hold you back. Come and experience, you know, sitting in the group with community and listening to what people have to share. We don't all have to agree on what something looks like to be able to find freedom and be able to be there for each other.
Yeah.
It's just so huge that we're trying to support each other and just sharing our lives and what we've been through so that people new to recovery can check it out.
Right. Yeah. In the big book, it talks about, I'm paraphrasing, but they say when we say God, we mean your own conception of God or a higher power. That's back to the,
so you know. They explain it pretty well then, huh?
You should believe in something, but we're not going to tell you what that is, what that looks like. And for me, the process was, you know, I was raised in, you know, a religious family, which I bolted from its, you know, 15 or 16, because what I wanted to do, I was going to burn, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. One of those.
You had a different experience than
yeah.
me.
Right. So, it was for me, I just turned my back on God or a higher power, because it didn't work in my life. You know, but it was also, you know, at that point in my life, I was also, you know, well into developing my addiction and my love affair with alcohol. So it was easy enough just to turn my back on that and say whatever. But coming into recovery and hearing that I needed to have a power greater than myself or a belief in God, I had to tear down that old belief that I had, you know, about, well, you know, God wants me to burn, because they told me I should have a God that loves and cares for me and wants me to be happy. And that was a kind of a radical concept for me to try to absorb. So given time, you know, I gave it time. I struggled for a while. Somebody said, oh, write out a want ad for the kind of God you want to have, you know. So I tried that, and you know, it was a good exercise, but mainly it just pointed out how selfish and self-centered I still was. I want a God that's going to let me win the lottery. I want a God that, you know, all these silly things. But getting down to the work, I finally came to the realization that I was never going to understand God. So when people ask me, you know, what's your higher power? I call it the God of my non-understanding. And that's not to say that I'm stupid. It's to say that I'm not so, you know, egotistical that I can define God and, you know, what God is capable of, you know, if God is male, female, ethereal, you know, doesn't have a sex, doesn't have a, you know, what is it? I don't know. and it doesn't matter to me. It because when I have asked out into the universe for help or guidance on in matters, I've gotten an answer of some sort. You know, whether it's a direct answer, do this, you know, this direction becomes for some reason obvious to me as being the right direction to go. You know, I'll get an answer that way. Sometimes I don't get an answer, and I've learned to understand that the answer is wait. You know, I have a friend who says I'm on a need to know basis with God. And if I don't need to know right now, I won't know. But when I do need to know, he'll let me know. And it was through the practice of asking, you know, for help. Just like I reached out to AA for help with this drinking problem. Now I ask for help from this higher power in prayer. And I use the word God because it's simple and pretty much everybody understands the basic concept of, you know, God as, you know, a Godhead, the, you know, spirit of the universe, the creator, whatever else you want to call it. And I ask for, you know, guidance, for direction, you know, how can I be a better person today? You know, in the morning when I get up, I keep my big book under my bed, so I have to get on my knees to get it. And while I'm down there, you know, why not offer up a little request for help and, you know, to do better today than I did yesterday and to be thankful, you know, for the fact that I woke up. You know, I'm getting up there in years, and there's always the possibility that I'm going to wake up dead, if that's possible.
I mean, you know, dying in your sleep, there could definitely be worse things.
So. That's right. Well, my grandpa died in his sleep, which was far better than the other people in the car with him. You know,
oh, ouch.
Yeah, he shouldn't have been driving, but no. All right. Yeah, it's something that, you know, everybody has to work out for themselves. But for me, it was just basically taking it on a wing and a prayer and saying, okay, I'm going to do these things. And when I started getting answers, when it became real to me that something was out there that was guiding and helpful and loving and kind, I didn't pray for things for myself other than guidance or clarity. You know, I stopped praying to win the lottery and actually started just buying tickets to see if I could win.
And I always felt like that could just bring a whole another slew of problems, you know?
Oh, that's right.
Oh, goodness sakes.
I'd be willing to give it a shot, though.
Would you?
Yeah.
Okay.
I've actually sat back, side note, I've sat back and thought about that. And with the way drinking Johnny thought about it and the way sober Johnny thinks about it, I've thought about those two differences.
Probably a big difference.
And I think I would be a little more altruistic.
Do you think sober Johnny's more of like a philanthropist or something like that?
A philanthropist,
like, you know, somebody who would help people and donate money and like put it to good use.
Oh, definitely. I mean,
because that, you know, that would just be a fantastic job. Just be like, oh, you need some money?
Yeah, you need some money.
Sister, gives you your calls. What are you doing? Oh, okay. Yeah.
That would be great, but when you talk about would that create more problems, you know, you got to think about, you know, somebody comes to you and says, I need money for this project. Well, tell me about the project.
So, and that's
and
kind of
whether
the,
they're going to get money or not depends on
you. So that's kind of the thing. I feel like it would take a lot of really good character and some wisdom and some good boundaries to be able to navigate that.
Yeah.
And honestly, I don't know that I'd want anyone to really know.
That's right.
Wouldn't that be just great?
And what if it was something that conflicted with what you were already, you know?
Because it gets real tough when you're the person with the big purse.
That's right.
I'm just saying.
That's right.
I just feel like it would be a lot of work to keep track of all that. I'm not saying that I'm not up for the challenge, but I would put that more on God's will if at any point in time he thinks that that's something that needs to be part of my life. Otherwise, I'm good.
Right.
Because
right.
I think that, you know, I could turn money into a problem. You know?
Well, I think we're all, to a certain extent, philanthropy, you know, comes into our lives because, you know, in AA, we put a dollar in the basket when it comes around. Your church, I'm sure you make a, you know, an offering, if not a tithing.
We do that online now.
Right. Yeah. And, and you know, when somebody calls you up and say, hey, there's this thing on GoFundMe. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not going to fund anyone's vacation to Europe, but you know.
No, but if their kid dies.
Yeah. If their kid passes away or is sick or.
That's another thing.
For me, many times it's been somebody's going through a divorce and needs a place to sleep. Yeah. You know,
I actually got to find out about one this weekend. Went on a retreat with my restoration group and got shared a story about how at a men's breakfast, one of my friends had the courage to say something, and it turned into raising $5,000 and getting the single mama car, the single pregnant mama car.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, there's just all sorts of great stuff with people's generosity and the things that can happen in that. And I'm just grateful to hear about those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And also grateful for the people to have courage to say something about it and then also to contribute. That's really cool. And in the story, I could just see God's hand working through all the different kinds of things that just like happened kind of sort of miraculously in a sense in some areas. That's really cool.
Right. The odds that somebody speaks up and
I'm
odds
not talking about somebody, myself.
Yeah.
just to be clear.
Yeah. And somebody, I think you would have told me.
I mean, I'm a single mom,
pregnant.
A divorced single mom now, but. Right. Yeah. The pregnancy part. Gosh. Oh, no.
I remember one time you came in and you go, I got this great news. And I said, you're pregnant. And you went, no, I just had a big lunch. And I laughed. That was so funny.
I'll just throw something at you. Yeah. I'm too old for that. I have grandkids now.
Yeah. Yeah. So you can raise grandkids. That's fine. Let's see. Where were we? Oh, yeah. So many things in this article, so significant. And, I wish I could tell people which edition of the Grapevine this came from, but I didn't. But I can tell you that, a lot of AA meetings, you know, have copies of this Grapevine, or you can go to AA.org and you can subscribe to it. It's a monthly deal. They mail it out. You can even get it online now. Everything's online now. You can get big books online, The 12 Steps, 12 Traditions, as Bill sees it. You can go online to get the daily reflections. You can do all that stuff online.
Is it a prayer
online.
And meditation?
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, I encourage you, if you want to see more articles like this, it's a great opportunity. The big book, I think one day I'll read a story from the big book. I think I have in the past. There's a selection of like 40 stories broken up into different chapters or sections in the big book where people tell their story of recovery. Mm-hmm. And they're much longer than this. They're, several pages long. But I've had the opportunity to go through and read those with, people who I've worked with in recovery to help them relate to the program and, these people's stories. I mean, I think that's really what gets people who come in to stay. Mm-hmm. It's like, I've had that experience, which is why I really encourage, my sponsees, even when they're new in the program, like, I don't want to talk, my story's not that interesting. Well, it might be just what that next new guy needs to hear.
Sure.
Or even stranger, it's important for me to hear somebody's fresh pain so that I can remember what it was like in those first days and weeks.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's interesting. It's like it hasn't changed. Like, if you were out there today, I mean, it's changed in some ways, but it's still the same. Still the same heartache and trouble, It's good to be reminded that nothing's changed just in case you start thinking, maybe.
Yeah.
That's why the newcomer is important. Yeah
that's right. Yep. You'd be amazed how many people I know that have decades of sobriety will occasionally share in a meeting that, the weirdest thing happened the other day. I had this thought that, you know, maybe I could have a drink. You know, like I was saying, you know, mm-hmm. when I'm out right. with friends, every once right. in a while, I was like, wow, I wish I could. No, I don't.
Johnny doesn't know how to turn the button off.
Yeah, right. Well, and it's really, you know, the old saying that, you know, my disease is the 500-pound gorilla over in the corner doing push-ups, just waiting for me to, you know, take that first drink. For me, in my experience with relapse, it was not that there was a bottle in front of me initially. It was just that thinking, you know, maybe having a resentment that was unresolved.
Right.
You know, I had a pretty good one going yesterday. We're driving back from Spokane, and we're on a little two-lane highway with not much of a shoulder and ditches on both sides, and traffic's coming at us, and this little old lady decides to pass a car, and there's not enough space. I can see that. And so I had to like slam on my brakes and get as far over as I could. And we just missed by feet, you know, had I not stopped. And thank God the guy that was behind me also kind of figured out what was going on and hit the brakes too, or he would have, if he'd have cleaned me out, he'd have driven me into her and then the car, she, right. you know, and who knows
right.
what would happen. You know, so of course I honked my horn and, you know, flew the bird up in the air. It was kind of funny. My wife goes, "Why'd you do that?" She couldn't even see you. And I'm like, "Oh, it made me feel better."
They have signs now.
Did it really?
They have like a light up like hand that will do different kinds of things. I'm like, "Oh, that looks like trouble." Yeah, right. I better not get one of those.
Yeah.
Mine would probably just be waving all the time. Be like, "Hi.
Hi. How
thank
are you?
You." Yeah. Making little hearts and stuff.
That would be so strange and yet fun at the same time.
I think I would lean towards the nice end. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I would be a little irritated though if the person almost caused a, you know, pile up accident and stuff like that. I mean, I don't like being endangered. That's no fun.
Yes. Yes.
And then I would have prayed for her.
Yes, yes. Like a transmission failure.
No, I'd have prayed that she wouldn't do that again. Well, Lord, whatever's going on with her, keep her safe and keep everyone else safe.
Right. Yeah. Oh. So, hey, you know what? We're at the end of our time. So thanks, Denise,
for Johnny.
Sitting in on this one today. And, you know, I'll be back next week after I go get my brain scanned. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they won't find anything, but I'm going to do it anyway.
They got to check anyways, right?
That's right.
Your wife is curious.
This could explain a lot. And I'll close it out with the usual. You know, if you think you have a problem with substances, alcohol, whatever, dope, whatever, or mental health issues, you do.
Face, welcome. it's a place to be with you. Look around, see what you do. Everybody smiles at you. Yeah.